We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Spark. I'm your host, Asia Tab. We're bringing back our journalist roundtable. I'm being joined by WITF's Scott Blanchard, Director of Journalism, and Tim Lambert, Special Projects Editor, to talk about their 2024 election coverage plans. Thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
Great to be here.
Okay, awesome. So we're just going to dive right into it. So tell me about your election coverage for this year. I know you guys have a pledge, and I can read it if you want, but let's talk about why you guys put that pledge out.
Well, I think it was really important to set our expectations for our listeners, our viewers, our readers. I think it was also important to set expectations for our journalists as well in the newsroom at WITF, so they know what we expect from them as well.
Right, and we're doing things a little bit differently than other news organizations do. And I would say, go ahead and read it. Let's hear it, and maybe people will have some response to it, or we welcome response to it, actually.
Okay, I'm going to read it. So our pledge is WITF's political coverage will be biased towards two things, democracy and facts. We'll create a citizen's agenda of issues you want candidates to discuss and base our coverage on those issues, not on candidates. We will be transparent and make decisions thoughtfully. We will center democracy in our coverage so you'll know when it's being threatened or supported. We will avoid horse racing coverage. We will report on facts to counter spreaders of mis and disinformation. We will speak truth to power and follow the facts wherever they go. So how has previous coverage like shaped the new pledge moving forward?
Well, I think We had an atmosphere where we would be out covering campaign events, and the candidate said this. This is what the candidate's telling the crowd. So we focused, you know, on individual things happening instead of a bigger picture. And then, of course, a lot of journalists fall into the polls, right? So
yes.
you look at polls, and even NPR the other day said polls show that the race for president is tied. It's not tied. Not a single vote has been cast yet. So to frame it that way is wrong. The polls at this point basically are just a snapshot. So we want to get away from that coverage. We want to focus on what voters are thinking about, issues that matter to them, issues that matter to their community. And I think that is a big change over 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But a lot of organizations still think it's like 2008 and this is how we cover politics.
Right. And I think one of the things we recognized and decided to act on was that politicians will have their own agendas, and they'll go out in public and do news releases, and they'll talk about those things that they want people to care about. Those things aren't necessarily the things that people care about, and you find that out when you go out into the public and you start talking to people and you say, what's going on in this town? And sometimes you'll hear that there's a national issue that they connect with, but a lot of times it's what's happening in their neighborhood or what they see every day and how a politician, whatever office they're running for, could affect that. And so we think that was missing a lot in not only political dialogue, but in political coverage, journalism. So that's why we want to try to get back to the idea of what people want the candidates to be talking to them about as they're asking for their vote. And the closer we can get to that, I think the better journalism will be doing, and the more it will serve the people who it's supposed to serve, which are the people who live in central Pennsylvania.
And how are you reaching out to the people who will, like the voters? How are you touching them and asking them what they want to hear from the candidates?
Several different ways. We have on WITF.org/elections, there's an embedded question form that anyone can go on and fill out. It literally says, what questions do you want us to be asking the candidates? So we're taking those questions and we're compiling those. That's part of what we're using to compile a citizen's agenda, which you read about in the pledge, which will help create the foundation of the issues that we'll cover and the things that we'll ask candidates about. We're also doing events, public events, like our News and Brews series. We were just in Hershey on Tuesday with some amazing conversations with people, asking them, among other things, what questions do you want us to be asking the candidates, and just listening to all of the issues that they brought up about what's happening in their backyards. And we take that, add that to the list of things that people are concerned about. We also have texting clubs. Ben Wasserstein, our Capitol Bureau chief, and Rachel McDevitt, our climate reporter, both have texting clubs that where people can talk with them, and they can ask questions of their followers, and their followers can ask questions of them. That's another way to communicate. That's just three. There are a number of other things that we do, but we're always trying to find new ways to connect with people and have people tell us what's going on. Another way would be the Purple Buck, the email weekly newsletter that I'm writing that brings people inside the newsroom and also encourages that kind of back and forth.
And that brings me to my next question, the Purple Buck. Explain to me what that is, and then also why is it called the Purple Buck?
Wow, how much time do we have? The Purple Buck is Purple Buck is a painting that hangs in one of our conference rooms here in the newsroom now. It was painted by an artist named Julia Lucich, who lives in British Columbia, Canada, who is a U.S. native, who was reading our coverage of the post-2020 election when the election fraud lie was really being propagated, nonstop without any evidence. And she appreciated that we took a stand against the election fraud lie to call it what it was and to report on the evidence that showed that that election was secure and accurate. And so she has a series of paintings that she calls party animals, which are animals that are in their natural setting but in different colors that you wouldn't find in nature.
Yes.
And so she painted that. She took the state animal, the white-tailed deer, painted a deer. There are other deer normally colored in the painting, but a herd of deer. Thank you. But she painted the one and colored it purple and sent it to us as a thank you for standing up for facts and for democracy. And so that meant a lot to us. That we had a lot of support for what we were doing from across the country and really across the world, actually. But that was a physical manifestation of that, and we really, really appreciated it. And so when we started the newsletter and we were trying to name it, which is always the most difficult thing we do, is to name anything, right? We went through a bunch of different names. The Purple Buck was always kind of up there we were almost kind of like half serious about it. And then it started to feel like the right thing, because the email newsletter was going to bring people inside the decision-making that we do in the newsroom, encourage them to have a voice, talk about why we make the decisions we do and standing for democracy and facts. And so it sort of all came together over a period of time, and that's why we named it the Purple Buck.
And how can we subscribe to the newsletter?
WITF.org/Purple Buck.
Perfect.
Yep. Like you said that before.
He did say it before, but I wanted to make sure we remembered. And then, Scott and Tim, I took your advice. I went to the election website and I saw the facts, and I kind of wanted to talk a little bit more about that. So you guys have accountability language. Can you explain to me what that is?
Sure. Our accountability language points out lawmakers on the state and federal level that signed on to letters or lawsuits that talked about not certifying Pennsylvanians' votes in 2020, just for the presidential election, not the rest of the election, which some of them were reelected that year as well. So as we know, those actions were used by the former president to rile people up that the election was somehow fraudulent or stolen, and the result was what happened on January 6th at the U.S. Capitol. And that was something that, we decided that was unprecedented in this country's history. It was an assault on the actual symbol of democracy, drove lawmakers from the chamber, threatened the actual election. There was no peaceful transfer of power, the first time that ever happened. So we decided to add this language, pointing out anytime these lawmakers were mentioned, pointing out what they did, that the actions based in facts. We've altered that in the last couple of years to just when it mentions those lawmakers when it comes to elections, democracy, and I think one or two other things.
Voting.
And voting. Yeah, so we narrowed it down, and we mention that in every story. We post a little box online or on air. We'll just say, you know, as a note, as per our election policy, our election accountability policy, X, Y, and Z. So that's just something that we've done. You know, we I think, are one of the few news organizations that took that step.
Yeah, and it's so amazing that you guys have done that. Could you talk to me about why it's so necessary and needed?
Well, I'll repeat one of the things that Tim said early on and has said since, and maybe you wrote it in the story that where we introduced it. But we know that we live in a culture that where, you know, there's a big news story one day, and then the next day there's another big news story, and so the previous day's story just gets forgotten, and people just move on, and they don't really connect the dots. We don't sometimes connect the dots and remember, like, what is influencing the news today, tomorrow, next month. So Tim's phrase was he didn't want this to be memory hold, you know, that to just go down that black hole of being forgotten. And so that it was important to us because for the reasons Tim just said about how unprecedented this was and how this was going to affect everything going forward in terms of national elections and national politics and local politics, that we wanted to have that constant reminder to people to make sure that we brought that context forward and made sure that we connected the dots continuously so that people would understand, oh, this thing that's happening in, you know, July, it's part of what happened in January.
One thing that's on the facts page that's really interesting to me is you said that you're going to talk about how you report on candidate campaign appearances. And that's something that's interesting to me because I started my career in Iowa in 2019, heading into the 2020 election Iowa caucuses. And I saw a lot of election appearances up close. So I just want to ask you, how are you guys going about that?
I think our approach is to weigh those campaign appearances cover them, but not cover them as campaign events. We will go there to talk to voters, which we talked about in the last segment, about talking to voters about what matters to them, trying to approach it by going to the voters and saying, I don't care who you vote for. Obviously, you're here at this campaign event because you support this candidate, but it doesn't matter to us. We don't care about that. What matters to you? What issues matter to you? And kind of talk to voters about it. We also want to see what the candidates are saying about issues as well, and if that matches up with anything the voters tell us. But also fact check those candidates about the claims they're making, and not so much give them unfiltered, here's a soundbite from candidate X, and he says this thing. We don't know if it's true or not, but we're going to throw it out there. We're just not going to do that anymore.
Understood. And I think one of the projects I saw was how you guys explained how you were going to do the NRA type of event and how you were going about that. So that definitely speaks to that. What was that experience like when you guys made that decision?
About how to cover the NRA event that
Yes.
Trump spoke at? It was a decision made along the lines of what we had laid out about how philosophically we were going to do that. So we had a meeting to talk about, hey, what could we go out there and ask people about? We know, as Tim just said, we know the type of, like, where the people were going to be leaning politically who went to that rally. And so we talked about, like, what can we ask them about that would be issues that we could, that maybe there's a story there about how they feel about issue X or Y. And I think one question that will guide us in all of these, I think, is, you know, what issues are happening where you live that you're concerned about that this candidate or other candidates could do something about, right? And what do you want them to do? So I think that was the question that night that kind of won out, you know, in terms of what people were responding to. And that's what the story ended up being about. So we tried to localize it. We really feel like a lot of politics has been nationalized to the extent that you will hear people in whatever town in central Pennsylvania talking about the things that they're seeing on national news coverage like CNN or Fox or whatever. And what we're trying to do is say, okay, that's cool if you are tuned into all that, but what is happening here that your mayor or state rep or state senator or the president, you know, could do anything about? What do you want to see happen? What could bring about a positive result for you? What would be a negative, you know, anything that we could do to get them talking about the localization of politics and of how we can focus on communities, you know, solving problems that exist where they live, you know.
And what can we expect next from your coverage? Maybe next week, this week?
I think in the coming weeks, what we're working on with our Democracy Beat reporter, Jordan Wilkie, we're working on explainers about the voting process. I think a lot of media organizations, us included, in the past just took for granted that people understood how the process worked, how poll workers worked, how the votes are counted, the process, what happens after Election Day to certify the votes and tally them up. Mail-in balloting. There are so many issues that popped up that have been questioned by some folks that we feel it's important to put that information out there. Here's a basic explainer of how the process works from X, Y, Z, from requesting a mail-in ballot to the deadlines for submitting those ballots to what are the rules around those ballots to how do you register to vote, how do you change your voter registration. The list goes on and on. What do poll workers do? So the list goes on and on, and I think that is, like, we just have to get back, it's weird to say, but get back to the actual basics of the civic duty of casting your ballot for your elected leaders.
And is it misinformation that's led to all of this, or maybe, like, more social media usage like TikTok within, like, 60 seconds of explaining what's happening in the election right now?
I mean, there's good content out there. It doesn't matter really what the platform is. But there are bad faith actors who are intentionally putting bad information into the ecosystem, and they're using every one of those platforms and more. And so it's a matter of what people are exposed to and where they can find news and information they can trust. We were talking about this on Tuesday in Hershey with a small group that I was with, talking about what Tim was just saying about, like, pre-bunking and doing stories that would talk about the process so that if you then see a story that says something wrong about the process, you have a reference to say, no, I know that's not true because I've read this or I've watched this video. Ideally, it would be from us, but we hope and we think other news organizations will do some of the same work. So the idea is, part of our idea is that we know people are going to be exposed to misinformation and disinformation. What can we do now to give them a foundation of solid information, credible information, so that when they see something out there, they're going to go, hang on. I'm not going to retweet that. I'm not going to believe that or say that to a friend or whatever, because I know the actual facts. And if they can then share those with a friend or share on their social media or whatever, it reaches even more people, and we have a chance to beat back some of this bad information that's going around out there. And that is a root cause of a lot of where we are right now in the country.
And I would just add, too, I think a lot of partisan bubbles that exist, people get their information from places that reinforce their beliefs. And sometimes that information is bad, and they refuse to – I shouldn't say refuse. They just – don't see, like, I'm going to look outside my partisan bubble here and try to find information that maybe pushes back against what I'm hearing. And they just don't have that sort of, like, desire or ability to find that information. And that's another thing that we're trying to push back against.
Yeah, social media can spread like a wildfire. It's just something that we've just seen in the upcoming years, especially on TikTok and Twitter. So your election facts are so useful. How did you go into describing what type of questions will help feed into your journalism and how people can decipher, like you were just saying, about knowing what is a good source of journalism to get their information and not?
I think some of those questions were informed by our engagement events and our other engagement efforts. We worked with a collaboration called America Amplified for several years, and so we've really invested in community engagement and listening to people. Others were questions that we just knew people would have, or they were questions about the stances that we have taken that we just wanted to get out there.
Yeah, and we worked with some partners on the national level, Trusting News, which promotes transparency in news organizations and trying to rebuild trust with listeners. So we had somebody from Trusting News sit in with us and go over these questions with us and potential answers, how we were going to describe those. Democracy SOS is a fellowship program we were part of for several months that sort of laid out some of the things we should be thinking about as we approach elections and how we can kind of change how we do things.
Well, I just want to thank you two so much for being with me, giving me so much good information. I'm so excited to see what you all do in the future. But in the meantime, make sure you're following us on Facebook at The Spark. I'm Asia Tabb. Thanks for listening.